because she didn't know what to say, to do, to think. It wasn't as if she didn't already know that Stellan had fallen for her. It just never occurred to her he'd share that with her in words. And further, the reasons why. He carried on.
And if you say you're not worthy of me, if you say it's not safe to love you, then right now I'm demanding another month on our deal, and you will give it to me. If it takes longer, I'll demand another month and another and another. And I will be perfectly fine if you never truly believe. And those months turn to years, and those years turn to decades, and you die in your sleep at a very old age. But do it, lying beside me.
It was then the first tear slid down her cheek. It did not go unnoticed.
Darling,
he whispered, I thought you'd read my books and ask me to leave. She whispered back.
Sweetheart, reading those books only made me more determined to make you stay. Frankly, your strength and determination and audacity and will to survive and nurturing spirit to the child you've kept safe and alive inside made me wonder if I was worthy of you.
And it was then the second tear fell. The third followed it, and there was no stopping them or the sob that tore up her throat and out between her lips. And then she was up and immediately down, Stellan sitting in the chair where she'd been, Six in his lap, curled close in his arms.
I'm sorry,
she blubbered, trying and failing to breathe deep, her voice cracking as she continued.
I'll pull it together. Promise.
Why? He asked. Why? The hero never falls apart. The hero always stays together, remains strong.
Because...
Be strong for the world, darling, if that's what you need to be. But here with me, you can be whatever you care to be.
That just made her cry harder, shove closer, her body rocking deeper with her sobs. Stellan held her tight against him, stroking the nape of her neck with his fingers while she did it. Eventually, the tears subsided, and Six just sat there, curled in his arms, sniffling.
Can I ask you for something, sweetheart?
He requested. He could ask her for anything, and she'd fight, steal, and die to give it to him.
Sure,
she answered. When she did, his arms gave her a squeeze, and she knew she'd amused him because she knew he knew the understatement that word represented. She'd fight, steal, and die for an opportunity to keep giving that to him, too. But his tone was grave when he said gently,
I want to take those things to the garbage bin.
She pulled her face out of his throat and looked at him.
If you're not ready, he continued quickly. That's understandable. But I want you to think about it.
I only let her out for you. His head twitched. She was only safe to come out for you, Six went on. His expression changed, growing fierce, as his hands moved to frame her face. Now she's me, she told him.
We're together. The idea of that petrified me.
But she came out, and I didn't even notice. That's how safe we were with you. A growl rose in his throat, but she didn't stop speaking.
I was terrified of you. My dad, I couldn't keep him safe. I knew I couldn't look after two people I loved. I'd already learned that. I lost him, but I found a way to survive. I knew the same wouldn't be true if I lost you.
Something flickered deep in his eyes, and he began,
Simone, if you want to throw those things away, she talked over him, then do it. You have to be ready to let go.
I was ready the second he grabbed my chin at the side of the gladiator pit. I just didn't realize it then, baby. His gaze took in her face as his lips rumbled,
Fuck, I need to fuck you.
She shifted in his lap and whispered,
Do it.
Not with that shit in this room.
She pressed her lips together. Stellan surged up, taking his feet, putting her on hers.
Do you want to take them, or shall I? He asked, staring down at the stuff on the ottoman, like someone had smeared his gorgeous piece of furniture with feces.
Do you actually know where the trash bins are? She teased.
He turned to her. Darling, as deeply as I love your sense of humor, I must inform you this moment is one that, although I expect they'll be very rare, you must know I can't fully appreciate you being amusing.
She pressed her lips together. His eyes narrowed on them. Okay, her man was not feeling like lightening the mood. So noted. But she felt like she could climb Camelback Mountain in a single bound and then leap directly through the sky, straight to the stars. He bent, grabbed the doll, which he handed to her, the crocodile, something he also handed to her, and the frame, which he kept. It was lucky she tucked the two things in her arm, because he then took her free hand and pulled her out of the room. It appeared he really didn't know where the trash bins were, considering they were lined up against the wall in the garage by the door. But he guided her toward the great room. Through it, out the door. She opened her mouth to share he was going the wrong way, but closed it when he led her to the recessed seating area, around which were white, padded, built-in, backed benches. In the middle, there was a fire pit. He took her right down and stopped them at the pit's side.
I'll be back,
he murmured, turned, and strode up the two steps to his built-in barbecue area. He opened a drawer and came back with a long grill lighter. He went to the side of the pit, turned a silver key, flicked the lighter, and a wave of heat came with the blaze of fire that shot from the lava rock. Stellan then tossed the lighter to the pad on a bench and moved back to her side. I take it the garbage isn't a permanent enough solution for you, she quipped. He leveled his eyes on her. Right, still not the time to be amusing.
Go, darling. Crocodile first, he ordered.
Yes, it wasn't time to be amusing. She turned her gaze to the fire. It was probably over 100 degrees outside, but somehow the heat of the day mingled with the flame from the fire seemed less like a roasting and more a cleansing. She tossed the crocodile in. It went up like a torch. Whoa, she mumbled. That fucking doll. Stellan, not wasting any time, growled. She glanced at his stern face and back to the flames. She tossed the doll in and took a step back, as the plastic hair curled into nothing nearly instantly, and the plastic face started melting, both searing the air with an acrid scent, and the clothes went up like tinder so fast, it was almost like they evaporated. The doll oozed. Dripping between the lava rock, the crocodile totally gone, disappeared, and she stood with Stellan at her side and watched as the doll continued to liquefy, vanishing drip by drip.
This morning is my famous French toast for my baby girl.
I didn't need French toast, Daddy, she whispered to the blaze. I didn't need a doll. I needed you to be a father. Stellan moved closer. Six and Simone, as one at last, stood and stared at the only thing she had that her father had given her, as it trickled away. We needed you to be a father, she repeated. Stellan had all the patience in the world now, and the doll was long gone, not a speck of her inside before he spoke again.
Are you ready for the pictures?
He asked gently. She turned to him and nodded woodenly. So lost in this bizarre but powerful ceremony, she hadn't noticed he'd taken them from the frame. He handed the paper to her. So flimsy. Once she threw them in, they'd be gone in seconds. How odd that something that captured a moment in time that should have been beautiful, emotional, precious. Those pictures kept and treasured and handed down so the people in them would never be forgotten,
could be so frail. If there existed a picture of her and Stellan, she'd throw herself into any flame that threatened to erase it from existence. She tossed the pictures of her parents in like they were completed grocery lists. And she was right. They were gone in seconds. Stellan curled her into his arms, but even as he did, Six kept her eyes aimed at the blaze.
"He made you French toast?"
he murmured. "Not often. When he didn't wake up strung out or hungover and was in a good mood."
"I shall never make you French toast,"
Stellan vowed. She stared at the flames, then tipped her head back and stared up at him. Her handsome savior. Her beautiful healer. She wasn't the hero of her own story. She also wasn't the villain. What she was one half of a whole. That's not the half she thought. The half that fit the other half of him. She could go on and fight again. Stronger, smarter, more powerful. Along the way, giving him what he needed to do that in return. They were the dynamic duo. "I love French toast," she said softly.
"Have you had anything to eat?"
he asked. "Not a chance. The way she spent her morning, if something went down, it would have come right back up." But suddenly, she was feeling seriously peckish. "No," she answered.
"Then we're having French toast,"
he decreed. He also started to move, his hold on her, sharing he was going to take her with him. But she locked her arms around him, and he stilled. "I thought you were going to fuck me," she noted.
"I am. But I haven't eaten either. And since the both of us will be naked for the rest of the day and active, we need fuel."
She smiled up at him. "Are you going to turn off the fire?" He sighed, let her go, went to the silver key, turned it, and the fire slowly died. Her parents and her past were wisps on the wind. Ashes. She felt no loss. She felt reborn. At that point, she could have made a joke about ending up in Phoenix. Looking at Stellan's face, though, she decided... later. He came back to her, tossed his arm around her shoulders, and moved her to the steps. She slid her arm around his waist and walked with him, their hips and legs brushing as they went. She heard the relaxing fall of water from the feature as they made their way to the house. "Can we do some of our nakedness and fucking in the pool?" she requested.
"Anything you want, darling,"
he murmured. Anything she wanted. It was the first time he said that it didn't terrify her. She felt nothing but light, clean, and happy. Stellan. After breakfast, while Simone was upstairs getting sunscreen, Stellan moved out to the fire pit to retrieve the frame he'd left there. He took it through the house to the garage and opened up the trash bin that sat next to the recycle bin just beside the back door. He tossed the frame in. Then he stared at it, reached in, retrieved it. Lifting his arm with all his strength, he pitched the frame into the bin, and the cheap, flimsy wood cracked, the thin glass shattering. He picked up what remained intact and repeat, 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 until there was nothing but bits of detritus. Only then did he lean into the knuckles of his fists against the wall and look down at his trash, his breaths coming fast, expanding his ribcage, his chest, as he stared at nothing but waste. But in his mind's eye, he saw block after block filled with Simone's graphically depicted, in more ways than one scarred beauty, doing terrifying things to survive a dangerous life and save the day again and again for a little girl who had a life of playing with exquisite dolls and miraculous wonders of fanciful tea sets in a room full of ruffles and lace and love. He also saw Simone staring at him with fear and heartbreak, standing on his deck and sitting in his library, thinking he'd set her free after she shared what beat down to the heart of her.
You goddamned fucking motherfuckers. Creating that beauty and sentencing her to live that life. I hope you're burning in hell.
He growled, took one hand, tossed the lid of the bin down, and pushed from the wall. He stared at the door like he wished he could pulverize it with his eyes.
She's mine now,
he told the door. Nothing vile or putrid is touching her. Never again. Not ever fucking again. With that, he straightened his shoulders, drew in a deep breath, and walked into his house, his home with Simone, to spend the day with the woman he loved, which would be just a day that would lead into the next, and the next, and the next. All of them where she'd be safe and happy and loved. Until neither of them were breathing.
19. Domestic decadence.
6. Late the next morning, Six walked in to sip, and right away spotted Sylvie Creed sitting at one of the tables. She was very petite, had long, wild, honey-blonde hair, green eyes, and a curvy body that Six didn't know if it came naturally or from the fact it seemed she was constantly popping out offspring. One look at her, you would never guess she was the badass Spitfire she was. But regardless of the fact she was an adoring wife and a devoted mother, her level of badassness made Six look like a cheerleader. The second Six spotted her, Sylvie caught her eye and lifted her chin as well as her plastic cup of iced coffee. So Six knew to go direct to the counter to order her jolt without worrying about setting Sylvie up. She did that, grabbed it, and walked to her friend, noting Sylvie watching her with growing intensity as she made the short trek through the kick-ass structure that served coffee and beer with a limited but delicious menu of food, all of this in a repurposed garage. From the minute Sylvie discovered it, that was the only place they met. Not a surprise, it was so totally her vibe, not to mention it was awesome and had some of the best coffee in Phoenix. Hey, Six greeted as she sat opposite the blonde. Sylvie stared at her, then asked, "What?" Six was confused. What? Sylvie did not exactly elucidate with her. "What's going on?" "I told you I have a job that I might..." "No," Sylvie cut her off. "What's going on with that look on your face?" "Damn." "Nothing's going on," Six lied, yes, yet again to a friend. "I just got a lead on a side job that, if I take it and it looks like I'm going to take it, I'm going to need someone to go undercover in a sitch where I can't do that." "That look on your face doesn't say job. It says my girl is getting herself some, and that getting is a whole lot of good." Stellan didn't miss a thing. If possible, Sylvie missed less. "I'm seeing someone," Six muttered.
"Say what?"
Sylvie almost yelled. "I'm seeing someone," Six snapped. "No big deal."
"Like someone you aren't tying up?" she asked back, finishing. "Not that there's anything wrong with that."
"People in my world hook up for more than just a hookup, Sylvie," she educated.
"That look on your face says that's the damn truth," Sylvie shot back. "What's his name, and how long has this been going on? And warning, your answer better not piss me off, seeing as my girl seeing someone means texting that info to her girl immediately, get me?
He and I, we've known each other years, but it only started recently. And so you'll be fully informed. We're living together. I moved in with him."
Sylvie's eyes took over her face. "It's not that big of a deal," Six said. "It's not that big of a deal," Sylvie parroted.
"No," Six said sharply, hoping that'd be the end of it. It wasn't the end of it.
Heads up, commitment phobe. Moving in is totally that big of a deal.
It took some effort, but Six managed not to roll her eyes.
At least he didn't move in with you, and please God, tell me he doesn't live in a shittier studio than you used to. Sylvie added.
His place is... Six couldn't help but grin. Really nice.
Anything is nicer than that squat you used to call home.
It wasn't that bad, Six protested.
It sucked, Sylvie returned.
Six really couldn't argue that.
So spill, Sylvie pushed. What's his name?
She'd find out anyway, considering outside Arius, Sylvie was the closest thing to a BFF she had in Phoenix, or anywhere. And Stellan simply wasn't going anywhere. And Sylvie also was a private investigator, so if Six didn't spill, she'd go out of her way to learn what she wanted to know.
Six decided to save her the effort.
Stellan, she answered. Stellan Lang. She didn't have to say the second part. On his first name, Sylvie's eyes took over her face again, and she instantly snatched up her cell sitting on the table in front of her, engaged it, poked at it, and hit speakerphone so that Six could hear it ring.
Sylvie, she started.
Yo, baby,
Tucker Creed's voice said via speakerphone.
Get this, partner, Sylvie crowed. Six is banging Stellan, and by banging, I mean I'll move in domestic bliss if her face is anything to go by. Bang-ing.
The good news was that she wouldn't have to introduce Stellan to Sylvie and Tucker through some awkward dinner party or something. Clearly, for whatever reasons that could come about, they already knew him.
Well, shit,
Tucker muttered, sounding amused. Six looked up to the ceiling.
She's totally loved up, Sylvie declared, and Six moved her eyes back to her friend in order to glare at her. It's coming out of her pores so bad, it's turning me on.
And finish your meeting quick, baby, and get your ass to me.
Roger that, Sylvie replied.
And tell Six, I'm glad for her, Tucker said. Stellan's solid.
He could say that again.
I'm right here, Six piped up. You're on speakerphone, so pretty much everyone at SIP knows I'm banging Stellan.
Glad for you, babe,
Tucker repeated, sounding like he was laughing. Six shook her head.
I gotta get this meeting done so I can get to you and work out this vibe, Sylvie cut in. Love you, Hubs. Later.
Love you back,
Tucker said before Sylvie disconnected.
Was that necessary? Six asked.
Totally, Sylvie said through a grin with her straw to her lips before she sucked. After she sucked, she asked,
Do you tie him up? He's a dom, Six sighed. Bummer, Sylvie muttered. I was having visuals of Stellan Lang tied up. I love my man hard, but they were good ones. Six knew how that felt. So, he's a dom, and that's your swing, too, so how's that work?
Sylvie asked curiously.
He ties me up.
Sylvie grinned.
Even better.
And gives me toys. Six went on, not wanting to, but knowing Sylvie wouldn't let it go.
Yowza, Sylvie said, her eyes dancing. Nice.
She finished on an exaggerated drawl. Six's brows went up.
Can we talk about work now?
Sylvie put her drink down, nodding.
Sure, shoot.
You know the bolt? Six asked.
Yup,
Sylvie answered. Six laid out what Carlo told her, watching Sylvie's face get serious while she did. She concluded that with, I've done some research on all the partners. Like my guy said, Josh Coates is a flake, but he's as solid of one as you can get, as far as I can tell. Barclay Richardson is just straight-up good people. And from what I got after making a few calls this morning to players I know in that scene, he'd lose his mind if he knew this was happening. The last asshole, Pete Beardsley,
is just that, an asshole. He's a mess. Got a rap sheet? Petty shit, but it includes possession with the intent to distribute, something that he pleaded out, and soliciting a prostitute twice. It's primarily his mismanagement that led the Bolt to nearly having to close down before they recruited Richardson to buy in, turn the place around, and run it. Which he does, efficiently. And now it makes a good profit. The three players I talk to report Beardsley is skeevy. Most the women, subs, and doms stay well away. And they all share that they think something has been up recently, at least the past couple of months, since he suddenly has a stable of females available to him when no one would touch him.
So he partakes as well as hires out, Sylvie mumbled.
Six nodded. Apparently. I can't know unless I get in there. My guy is setting up a meet with me and Josh. That's happening this afternoon. But if I take it on, I can't go in like I need to. I'm known in the scene. I'd never get this guy to believe I'm ripe for the picking.
Babe, I want in on this with you, Sylvie said, picking up her coffee. But this is decaffeinated.
Damn. You're knocked up? Six asked.
Yep, Sylvie answered before sucking back a sip.
Again? Six queried. Sylvie swallowed and smiled as angelic a smile as she could, which meant it was naughty, but happy.
Yep.
Happy for you, Six said softly, and Sylvie's smile got bigger.
I am too. Creed acts every time like it's the first time, so he's clomping that big body of his around on air.
Jesse wants a baby brother. Rayleigh keeps screaming, Sissy! So I'm feeling where she's going.
I don't care. It's another being made of me and Creed, and he or she will be loved, and that's all I need.
Another being made of me and Creed, and he or she will be loved, and that's all I need.
Six looked away.
Serious as shit, sister, Sylvie said quietly. You and Stellan would make beautiful babies. He's way hot, and you're gorgeous. She and Stellan had had the day before. It was the most beautiful day of her life. No day could possibly surpass it. She knew that down to her soul. And it sucked to realize right then that even though they'd successfully navigated that minefield, things might not be just smooth sailing.
Six looked back to her friend, cleared her throat, and stated,
We're nowhere near there yet.
Well, when you are, don't look to me to throw your baby shower. I'll show if there's alcohol and I'm not pregnant. Though, I'll also show if I'm pregnant, but only due to hormones making me a sissy wuss. But I won't throw it.
Six shot her a grin. I'll file that in my memory banks.
Sylvie's eyes sparkled, even if they still looked speculative, and then she returned to Sirius.
Back to the situation at hand. Creed would lose his mind if I brought the news to him that I was going in undercover as a submissive at a BDSM sex club, even if I wasn't pregnant. Seeing as I am, even not showing yet, if I shot that by him, his head might explode.
That's cool, Sylvie. I'll find another way.
Sorry, babe. But if you need backup, I'm in. Creed doesn't start trying to put his foot down about me being out in the field until the middle of the second trimester. And you know, you always have him.
Six nodded, wondering why she hadn't noticed what good friends she had and the length of time she'd had them.
Unless deep into a pregnancy, Sylvie was always down to partner up or have her back, and the same with Tucker. No matter the situation, no questions asked. She was seeing, somewhat uncomfortably, considering how long she'd held her down, how having Simone back was a good thing. And she was finding, definitely fortunately, with the friends she'd earned,
It was a better late than never scenario, not a too little too late one. Most important, though, was that now she had this understanding she needed to keep her head out of her ass and take care of what she had a lot better than she'd been doing it.
I can do legwork outside the club and computer work if you need it, Sylvie offered.
I'll let you know after my meeting with Coates, Six replied.
That was when Sylvie blindsided her. If it's this good, and I can tell it's good, Six. Kids only make it better.
Six drew in breath and kept trying out this honesty to friends thing.
I didn't have the best of childhoods.
Sylvie leveled her eyes at Six in a way that she believed every word that came out of her mouth next.
I bet Creed and me got you beat. My dad? When I can drink again, I'll share what he did to me, to Creed, the lengths he went to keep us apart. And years later, Creed sprinkled Jesse's hair on that motherfucker's grave. We didn't make our boy as a fuck you to my father, but it was a hell of a fuck you to my father. And that's the thing, Six. In the end, the beauty of it is that you don't need that fuck you. The fact you went on living, finding someone to love who loves you back with everything he is, and making babies is just that, all for you, all you need. It just becomes the beauty of your life. But it doesn't suck either, having that damned fine of a fuck you.
Six grinned at her again. Oddly, for the first time in my life, I'm feeling maternal.
Sylvie burst out laughing.
And Six, continuing to explore this sharing business and finding it also didn't suck, not by a long shot, laughed with her. Six got home that night at a decent hour, having texted Stellan she would, so he knew evening plans included both of them together for dinner, and whatever came after. She'd met with Coates, who was a lot more together than she was expecting. Though she got the feeling that having one of his partners providing illegal sex-for-hire services, using his meal ticket to do it, had scared him straight. He was also a lover, not a fighter, and that love and respect extended to women. The mere thought that his partner was taking advantage of the fairer sex was visibly nauseating him. So she took the job. Even if the guy could only hand her $500 in cash, saying,
Promise, Six. I'm good for it, and if I'm right, Clay will back that and make sure you get your usual fee with any expenses.
Now she just had to figure out how she was going to get what she needed as Mistress Six at the Bolt. It was going to have to be observation and paid informants. And that last part got expensive. Not that she didn't have it, or didn't think Coates and his partner would be good for it. Just that information acquired like that was usually expensive, but it wasn't always accurate. Undercover was the only way to go, the optimal play. She just didn't know who she could recruit to go in. As she walked down the back hall toward the kitchen, hearing strains of Stellan's favorite light rock station, primarily Cool Change by the Little River Band, she felt nerves start to set in. They were real. They were happening. She was in love with him. He was in love with her. They had a future. And it was freaking her out. In order to handle that, she focused on the fact that Stellan listened to light rock when he was at home. But in his cars, he was all about Sirius's classic vinyl and classic rewind stations. He seemed like the kind of guy who would listen to Bach, Chopin, Beethoven, stuff like that. Little River Band, the Eagles, Fleetwood Mac, Pink Floyd, and Led Zeppelin would not have been her call. But she loved that about him. Fortunately, this was her thought, not her nerves. When she turned the corner and saw him standing at the island, surrounded by the makings of whatever their dinner was going to be.
She stopped as she took him in his suit trousers, his feet bare, his dress shirt still on. Tie gone, shirt open at the throat, vest still in place, shirt sleeves rolled up. He got her text, came home, got semi-comfortable, and started dinner for them. Andy prepared food exclusively at the island. He used the stove, obviously, and the grill outside, but all prep work happened at the island, without fail. She knew that about him. She knew that later he'd put on jeans or some lounge pants, or be wearing nothing at all because they'd be making love. She knew the kind of music he listened to in his house and his cars, and she knew his washcloths in his private bathroom at his office were bright white, and that he never put celery in his salads because he hated it, and he took his steaks rare like she did and his martinis dry like she did. She also knew the reasons why he loved her. And he knew her, down to the deepest part of her, that was far more important than the fact she also loved light rock and classic vinyl and dry martinis. And it just made him love her more. He turned his head her way. And yeah, right. He was also so fucking handsome it was nearly impossible to believe. His lips tipped up in a welcoming smile. Yes, so fucking handsome. Hello, darling, he called. Hey, baby, she said softly. His head tipped sharply to the side, and she made her way to the island, taking only a slight detour to toss her stuff on the counter bar that delineated the kitchen from the dining area. He was wiping his hands on a towel and rounding the island toward her when she made it to him. He threw the towel on the island, watching it go. Then he turned back to her. And Six sucked in breath at the look she caught in his eyes. It was good she did. It automatically braced her for when his fingers latched on to her hips, and she was up, ass planted on the island. Before she knew it, she was pushed back to the island, her head barely missing the ingredients for their meal spread out at the other end. Her red leather miniskirt was shoved up, her panties yanked down her legs, and lifting her head, she just caught Stellan's going down, and she sucked in another breath when he went down. His mouth on her, working her deep. He spread her legs wide and ate her until she came, crying out his name, her fingers fisted in his hair. She lost purchase on his hair when she was dragged off the counter, put to her high-heel-shod feet, turned roughly, and she felt Stellan's hand working at her ass. Baby, she breathed. Ass up, he ordered thickly. She did as told, tipping her ass for him, and he slammed inside. Her hands flew out in front of her to brace against the counter, as her head jerked back, hitting his shoulder, and he stuffed his face in her neck, breathing hard there as he fucked her harder, his hand going down her belly, she knew, toward her clit. No, she whispered, catching it at the wrist, trying to stop its path. I just want to feel you, hear you. You're coming again with me, sweetheart, he said against her skin. I want. That got cut off with a moan as his finger found her clit and rolled. She pushed against her hands to rock into his thrusts and pressed the side of her head to the top of his face still buried in her neck. And they panted, she moaned and whimpered, he sighed and grunted. And finally his lips found her ear and he whispered, Now, Simone. And they both came. She was shuddering against him in her aftermath, when she felt that his arms had wound around her, one at her belly, one at an angle across her chest. His hand at her shoulder moved to her cheek, turned her head, and she was just able to catch his warm, satisfied eyes before he took her mouth in a gentle, slow, wet kiss. When he finished it, he stayed close, rubbing his nose against hers, asking quietly,
What were you thinking when you came into the kitchen? No hesitation, no prevarication, she gave it to him. That I like light rock. She watched that hit his eyes, reveling in the beauty of knowing he understood exactly what she was saying. Before he kissed her again, just as gently, just as wet, but a lot shorter. When he ended that one, he murmured, You get cleaned up. I'll make us both a drink. I can, man, a martini shaker, hot stuff, she noted. His brows went up. Really? I might need some practice to get to your level. But I'll never get it if you're always taking care of me. Darling, he whispered. That's the point. Oh, she knew that. And she loved that about him, too. Baby, she whispered back. Throw a girl a bone. I gotta have some of that action somehow. The beauty of that, as it reached his eyes, nearly made her knees buckle. If they had, since he was still holding her up with his arms and his cock still planted inside, it would have been okay. But she would have lost that look, and she wanted it forever. You can make our drinks after you clean up, he allowed. Much obliged, she muttered. He slid out and pulled up his pants before he bent to retrieve her panties. She pushed her skirt down and took them when he handed them to her. He did up his trousers as he moved back to his preparation station at the island. She carried her panties with her as she headed toward the powder room on the first floor. She also moved while calling, Hot stuff? Right here. She looked over her shoulder at him, giving him a small smile. Just an FYI. I wholeheartedly approve of that brand of welcome home. He smiled back, and his was not exactly small, but it was roguish. She loved that, too. She hit the powder room. She cleaned up. She slid on her panties. Then she headed out and kept on her high-heeled black sandals that were made of precisely two straps, one across her toes, one around her ankles, and her blousy white top, because she was comfortable in them. And if Stellan didn't take the time to change to see to her, she wasn't going to do it either to see to him. Thus, she made martinis for her and her man. They weren't as good as his. But on sip three, seated at the island, chatting with him as he made dinner, it didn't matter. It didn't matter on sip one, either. She was home, and he was home. And they had nothing but togetherness before they had to separate to take on their days the next morning. So nothing else mattered. Later that evening, after drinks and dinner, the pool light was roving through yellow, blue, green, and red underneath them, as Stellan and Six floated on his big beanbag-esque pool floats. They each had their own, but their floats were connected, since Stellan had his thigh thrown over hers and his arm twined in hers, his fingers lazily stroking the inside of her forearm. But it doesn't suck, either. Having that damned fine of a fuck you. Sylvie's words came to her, and she almost cackled, lying on a float in the pool of a Phoenician mansion with a gorgeous millionaire, her belly full of an Asian salad made hearty with perfectly cooked flakes of salmon fillet, and a martini that led to two glasses of the best Sauvignon Blanc she'd ever had.
You look amused. Stellan noted.
Life is funny, Six replied. He gave her a soft look.
This would partially explain why you look amused.
She explained more fully. I never thought about it, and it took too long to realize it. But I bested her a long time ago. But here I am with you. And this is all for me. It doesn't have shit to do with her. And that's the best of all. The soft didn't go out of his look, but there was some wary that leaked in, and Six could understand that, It probably wasn't easy for him to go from her holding back to her giving it all. She'd have to get him there. That was something else she was going to best. But right then, even though Six brought her up, it was cautiously when he continued to do that, asking, "Do you wish she could see all you've become?" "No, I don't even wish he could see it. I don't really care," she answered candidly. "I think that's healthy," he said gently. Carefully on the float, she turned slightly to her side, which meant hooking her leg firmer to his and crunching their floats together. "Baby, I'm still a mess. It's going to take a while to get used to being just me." "You'll get there," he murmured. "Yes, on a pool float, at night. In a pool with a hot guy. Orgasmed up, liquored up, and great fooded up." The wary went out of his expression, and she liked it a lot better when gratification filled it.
"Domestic decadence suits you," he replied.
"It would suit anybody," she returned.
"Only those who earned it."
She gave him a gentle smile. "I didn't earn any of this, Stellan."
"Yes, you did."
She stared at him.
"I pay for it, obviously," he continued. "But do you think it meant anything to me before, except being a place I enjoyed and felt comfortable being in when I was not at work? I grew up in greater opulence than this. It's meaningless. Until you have it to share with somebody, to give to somebody, someone who appreciates it, only then does it take on meaning."
He just couldn't be believed, even floating beside her, being all that was Stellan.
Honestly, she couldn't take it.
"God, you really, seriously need to stop being so damned awesome," she groused. He burst out laughing. She lost her peak, which poorly hid the depth of her emotion, and smiled while she watched.
"No," he said when his laughter died away. "We've had a great deal of weighty, and I think it's a good idea to have it, process it, but mingle it with a healthy dose of normal. Do you agree?"
She nodded.
"Then there are matters to discuss," he went on.
"Like what?" she asked.
"Like the fact I need to take a business trip to New York. I'll be gone 3 days. I'd like you to go with me."
"Whoa." "Well," she started.
"Not for the work days," Stellan clarified. "I'll be busy with meetings, and I don't expect you to drop everything and take vacation in order to travel with me. And not simply because most of the time I'm there, I can't be with you. But we could leave earlier than my meetings start, spend the weekend there together, and you can fly home Sunday evening as my meetings begin on Monday."
That would definitely work. And she loved New York. But more, she loved this indication he didn't think she could drop everything, take off on her job, her responsibilities, simply to be available to him. She just kept getting more from him. More love and more respect. "If I have enough notice, I think I can make that work with Joel," she told him.
"Excellent. It's in 3 weeks.
I'll talk to Joel tomorrow."
"Lovely, darling."
She smiled at him again, and she wondered if she smiled more that night than she had in her whole life.
Maybe.
But who cared?
"Now, on to Ami," he said. "It's fortunate your caseload lightened, because Arius said this mistress he has chosen for him is ready to meet us at the club tomorrow. Ami is also keen to meet her, considering she's a member of the Honey and trained there. He says, even if it doesn't work out for the long term, if she appeals to him, he'll go forward regardless, in the hopes it'll be an enjoyable scene. His background checks and interview have been approved, so he's free for tomorrow, too. We can ask him to come at a time after we set to meet with her. If you don't like her, we can approach one of the other mistresses to work him,
so he won't get nothing from the evening. If you like her, and Ami likes her, Arius wants us to watch her with him. Although she's working subs with supervision, she hasn't strictly been let out on her own. Does that work for you?
She had wanted to hit the bolt tomorrow to start up that investigation. But Stellan had arranged this, and Ami was a good guy who needed a good dom in his life, and a good woman. So, although women being victimized at a BDSM club took precedence, she'd allow this to delay it. Though during the day, she'd spend time hitting up some of the folks she knew who frequented the Bolt, and could keep their mouths shut but eyes open, so she could start gathering information about what was perceived to be happening there.
I'm in. Fabulous, he murmured, unhooking his leg from hers and using their linked arms to pull her float even closer, so their heads were lined up. He leaned in, she leaned in, they touched lips, and it was a testimony to superior floats that both of them didn't go under. When he broke contact with her lips, he made contact with her eyes. You ready to get out? He asked. Is that code for, are you ready to go upstairs so I can fuck you senseless? He grinned. Yes. She grinned back. Then yes. She braced to make a move off the float and into the water, but his fingers wrapped firm around her wrist, so she focused on him again. I am always here to take the heavy, he said softly.
I know, baby, she replied.
Never forget,
he ordered. I promise, I won't.
Thank you for yesterday.
Now he was being awesome and making her want to cry. Again, handsome, stop being awesome, she warned, instead of deep breathing to control the tears.
It's important you know what it meant to me, he noted.
Do you know what it meant to me? She asked.
You did not hide that.
You didn't hide it either.
Simone, understand me. It's important to me to know what it meant.
You sharing that with me? She didn't get it, and as ever, he didn't miss that she didn't.
It was a gift,
he stated.
That's what's important that you understand. Yesterday was a gift of trust. And there are a few gifts more important than that. We've got this lovely calm after a storm. But life does not stay calm. Whatever happens, understand this. Understand this calm is what defines us. Whatever happens, we'll find our way to it again. And more, don't twist what happened yesterday out of what it actually was, how important it was. In other words, never regret giving that to me. Or question whether you should have shared what you shared. Having you whole means more than my home, my cars, my business, anything. That's what you need to understand should anything ever threaten to split you apart again. You can and always will be Simone to me. And that, all of it, is the gift you gave me yesterday.
She sniffled, then snapped, seriously. Lay off the awesome. He smiled. Then he totally laid off the awesome when he lunged from his float into hers. Obviously, that took them both into the drink and under. She came up spluttering in his arms. Right, total jerk move, she shared, treading water with her hands on his shoulders.
You love it. He replied, treading water with his arms around her waist.
Do you think I could dunk you? She asked.
No, he answered.
She put pressure on to try to dunk him. He was right. Even treading water, he stayed head and shoulders above it. Major lower body power. So she tried a different tact. One hand went to his head to distract him. The other hand went somewhere else, right into his swim shorts. They both ended up going under.
She also ended up giving him head while he sat on the side of the pool, before they dripped their way up to their bed, where they fucked like teenagers, then passed out. Domestic decadence. Indeed.
20.
Never.
6.
On her way home the next evening, after a busy day of firm work and recruiting informants for the job at the Bolt, with only 15 minutes to change and freshen up to go out to dinner with Stellan, and then to the club to meet Mistress Naya, before hopefully approving her for a scene with Ami, Six was psyching herself up to do something she didn't want to do. But she had to do it because she just had to do it. Also because she was going to be at the Honey later, and there was a chance Lee would be there. So she needed to do it now. So, stopped at a stoplight, she scrolled down to Lee's name, reminded herself that all this sharing and honesty had been good, starting with blurting all she had blurted out at Susan, and all the dishonesty and denial that had come before it had really not been fun. She hit go on her steering wheel to make the call. It rang 3 times before she heard, "Sick, Sherry, how are you?" The light turned green, she hit the gas and replied, "Good, Lee. You?"
"Excellent,"
Ami Lee answered. "Listen, do you have a couple of minutes?" Six asked.
"Of course."
All right. What did she even say? Things weren't weird. Lee had never let them get to that. She still had to say something. "Okay, I don't know how to start this, but I lied in the Dom Lounge the other night. I needed someone to talk to."
"Oh, sweetheart,"
Lee murmured.
"What's happening?"
"Nothing now. I mean, my head was messed up with Stellan and, well, a lot of stuff. But he and I have... we've gotten a few things straight, so things are better."
"Stellan is, as you know, a Dom Six, and as far as I know has never switched. So I repeat my offer to introduce you to one who I think might be able to..."
"It's not the switch part," Six cut her off to say. "I've always been a switch. I've always known I was a switch. Since training. I just never found the right guy." Lee sounded amused when she replied,
"I can say with relative certainty, you've found the right guy now."
Six smiled at her windshield. "Yeah," she said softly. "That's another part of me wanting to talk to you. I wasn't truthful about that either. Stellan and I are together. Very together. And we're both going to work at it to keep that so."
"I'm so pleased,"
Lee responded. I just... How lame was she? "I just wanted you to know all that."
"As pleased as I am that you phoned me, I hope you know you didn't need to. Your business is your own, Six. Only unless you want to make it mine. And if you do, it'll be gladly received."
"I know that. I just haven't been very good at taking care of my friends because... God, why was this so hard? Life didn't start out great for me, Lee," she whispered. "Nothing good happened. So when good started happening, finding out who I was and what I liked, finding Arius, the club, the people in it, Stellan, I didn't understand the concept, and I definitely didn't trust it."
"I hate to hear life didn't start out well for you, Sherry," she said softly.
"I'm not alone with that. It is what it is. Or it was what it was. Now it is what I make it. I can keep letting it influence how I live and the relationships I have. Or I can learn to trust in the good that comes my way and believe that I, well, deserve it, I suppose."
"You deserve it,"
Lee stated firmly. How do you know? Six asked before she could stop herself.
Well, pointing out the obvious, sweetheart, you made this call, which couldn't have been easy.